It's 8:29. You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN 91.9 FM. I'm Katie Frankowitz. In today's news, a candidate in the race for Occiacum County Sheriff has a troubling past, and a mysterious fire knocked out cell service in parts of Tillamook County in recent days. These stories and more are up next on KMUN. A second round of state money meant to help local agencies address a housing and homelessness crisis across Oregon has been slow in coming, causing confusion and consternation for groups in Astoria. The money is supposed to go to rapid rehousing programs to get people off the streets and to rental assistance to keep people in their housing. Late this summer, Clatsop Community Action, also known as CCA, sent out notices to 122 households it had helped with the money, as well as landlords participating in the program. The notice let them know the money would run out by October 1st. This triggered confusion among tenants and worried calls to local leaders. Viviana Matthews, the executive director of CCA, says the agency decided to bankroll the programs themselves, at least through November 1st.
We met with households to see where they were with their budget, and some of them were able to pay full rent, some of them were not, and we have about 46 households that they will be like in limbo if the money does not come as early as possible. We will probably not be able to keep caring these families.
Monica Steele is the assistant county manager for Clatsop County. She expects the state money will arrive and CCA will be reimbursed, eventually.
The OHCS, Oregon Housing and Community Services, is supposed to be working on the contracts. Those contracts will come in draft to the county for us to review. We'll review them. If we're good with them, because of the amount of it, it has to go before our Board of Commissioners, and then the board will say, yes, you can go into a contract with OHCS, and in turn, we have to go into a contract with our subrecipients, and that also has to go before our board. So that's one of the things that we continue to communicate to OHCS is, once you have a contract to us, it's not immediate funding out the door, because our board only meets every 2 weeks.
Both Steele and Matthews say the state funding and the guidelines around it have been confusing from the start. The delay in funding, in combination with other concerns around homelessness in Astoria, has prompted city councilors to ask for a meeting with local social service providers. That meeting will be open to the public and is expected to happen soon. An unknown number of people were without cell phone and internet coverage for 3 days in Manzanita and Nehalem along the Oregon coast. Christian Foden-Benzel has more.
Damage to telecommunications equipment appears to have been caused by a suspicious fire on a railroad bridge near the end of Hadley Road that started Wednesday. Rural telecom company RTI is telling customers the damage was more significant than originally thought. The Tillamook County Sheriff's Office is working with the Port of Tillamook, the FBI, and the ATF to determine the origins of the fire. Anyone witnessing suspicious activity in the area is being asked to contact authorities. No injuries were reported. Christian Foden-Vansel, OPB.
A candidate in the race for sheriff in Wakayakum County has a record. An investigation by Investigate West found Joshua Grasseth has been convicted of at least 2 crimes while off duty and has a history of domestic violence and dishonesty. Grasseth is running for sheriff as a Republican in Wakayakum County. His opponent, the current Wakayakum County Sheriff John Mason, landed 85% of the votes in August's primary election. But police accountability advocates say Grasseth's candidacy underscores larger issues in the state. In Washington, sheriff candidates are not backgrounded and are only required to complete basic law enforcement training within 12 months of taking office. Records show Grasseth was arrested for fourth-degree assault against his ex-wife in 2009 and again in 2016. The first charge was reduced to disorderly conduct, a misdemeanor, and he was found guilty. The second charge in 2016 was ultimately dropped. In 2022, police on the Olympic Peninsula responded to a report of a truck partially submerged in the water. 2 intoxicated men were at the scene. They refused to give their names, and one man, later identified as Grasseth, became defiant, cursing at the officers. He was booked for obstruction and unlawful possession of a dangerous weapon. He was found guilty for lying to police. Grasseth did not respond to requests for comment about Investigate West's article. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. You're listening to KMUN. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to KMUN. We shift now to regional news across Oregon and Washington State. One of Washington State's members of Congress is working on a federal bill that would prohibit immigration enforcement during disasters. NWPB's Lauren Gallup reports.
U.S. Representative Emily Randall introduced the bill at the end of September. She says it was inspired by the two firefighters who were arrested by immigration officials while fighting the Bear Gulch fire in August. Speaking of the people arrested, she says,
"They were an essential part of the emergency management crew that was protecting people's homes and keeping this fire from spreading even bigger."
Randall says she worries the arrest could prevent people from becoming first responders.
"The American people are continuing to say that this isn't the kind of immigration enforcement that they support or expected from this administration."
The bill expands on Biden-era guidelines from the Department of Homeland Security that prohibit immigration enforcement during disaster response. Randall says it's unclear if those have been repealed. I'm Lauren Gallup reporting.
The federal government shutdown passed its second week mark, but that hasn't stopped logging in national forests. OPB's April Ehrlich reports.
The U.S. Forest Service is preparing to auction off trees in four national forests in Oregon and Washington by the end of the month. That's despite a federal shutdown that has furloughed hundreds of thousands of employees and strained many public services. Forest Service Acting Deputy Chief John Crockett says logging is an essential service. He issued a memo citing President Donald Trump's executive order from March, in which Trump calls timber production, quote, critical to our nation's well-being. The Forest Service has paused some other programs, including closing visitor centers where people can get maps and information about trail conditions. The agency also temporarily stalled prescribed burns during the shutdown's first week, even though October is prime time for burning off grasses and underbrush to prevent larger fires in the future. And I'm April Ehrlich, reporting.
This is KMUN. I'm Skylar Butenchin. Homelessness among seniors is rising in Oregon. Many rely on an increasingly fragile social safety net. OPB traveled to rural Polk County to learn more about the housing crisis facing aging and vulnerable people. Bryce Dole reports.
A homeless shelter sits across the street from Western Oregon University in the small town of Monmouth. Inside, Angelita Amaya was cooking dinner when we arrived. At 56, she used a powered wheelchair to get around.
This is who I am. I cook every day. I'll get up in the morning, cook. I'll get up in the afternoon, and I can just be who I am.
Amaya used to work for nonprofits and the state government, but financial challenges prompted her landlord to discontinue her lease. She was hospitalized repeatedly for heart problems, and now she stays in the shelter alongside her adult son.
I used to work for the homeless program. I used to help a lot of people get into homes, and now I'm on the other side.
The people of Oregon are getting older. Its birth rate is dropping, and the state is now home to more adults over the age of 65 than children. Meanwhile, a growing number of baby boomers are living in trailer parks, shelters, or even on the streets. More than one in four homeless people statewide are over the age of 55. many seniors rely on a fixed income like Social Security or programs like food assistance or Medicaid. But the federal government is now making it harder to qualify for those programs. And in Oregon's housing crisis, those benefits are seldom enough to get by. A single hardship can push people like Amaya into homelessness.
This is the worst situation I have ever been in. And I think it's harder for me now because I am older. I am in a situation where I'm not as mobile.
Retirement used to be a big part of the American dream, but many people never recovered from their losses during the 2008 financial crisis. Today, many seniors can't afford the steep costs of long-term care. And since the pandemic, many seniors are now searching for jobs in a labor market that often favors online work. With a shortage of affordable housing, many of them are staying at shelters like the one in Monmouth.
For a lot of us, you know, in a stable situation, we have family that we can call. But for most of our residents, you know, that support structure has been lost.
Polk County Chaplain Matt Smucker helps manage the shelter. Oregon lawmakers passed a bill this year funneling vast sums of money into facilities like this one. However, the legislature also had to make some major cuts to the state housing budget. That's because state lawmakers are contending with far less revenue than they anticipated. Homeless services groups across the state are cutting staff and programs. Smucker is trying to figure out what to do now.
Heading into winter, my concern is there's just going to be a lot more people who are vulnerable without somebody to call and who can respond right away.
Lawmakers took some steps this year to tackle the senior homelessness crisis. They passed a bill to make homes more accessible for seniors with grab bars and ramps. Other legislation aims to boost construction of studios, townhomes, and duplexes. But housing production throughout the state is dropping. And experts say too few of those homes are affordable units located near services that seniors need, like public transit or doctor's offices.
Yeah, so this is Praise Assembly Church.
Across town from the shelter in Monmouth, houseless people gather at a local church for a shower and some lunch. Among them is 59-year-old Angela Constantine.
Shouldn't family be taking care of their elderly? Shouldn't people come together to celebrate the elderly?
Constantine used to work at the front desk of a hotel in Gold Beach, but her life spiraled into homelessness. Her husband died of cancer, and then her daughter died of a fentanyl overdose. Eventually, Constantine relapsed.
I struggle with my face all the time, you know, because I'm trying to figure out how did I get to this position? How did I even get to the point to where I don't even have income?
Lately, Constantine has been sleeping in the local shelter. She's applying for a job as a janitor at the university across the street. She's waiting on 4 housing applications, and she carries her daughter's ashes in a heart-shaped container. She hopes to spread them soon down by the river in the nearby state capital in Salem. I'm Bryce Dole, reporting.
When boats reach the end of their seaworthy life, they don't simply disappear. Instead, many become floating eyesores, creating environmental hazards and costly cleanup challenges. But some of these vessels become makeshift homes for people with nowhere else to go. Noah Thomas with Oregon Public Broadcasting has this story.
Phil Hudspeth stands in the cockpit of a patrol boat as it cruises down the Willamette River. He's holding a stack of large orange stickers.
We're out in the Multnomah Channel with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, and we're going to be looking for abandoned and derelict vessels, and we'll be placing pre-seizure notices on the boats.
Hudspeth is the boating policy and environmental coordinator for the Oregon State Marine Board. One of his job duties is keeping track of abandoned boats.
So realistically, we'll look at probably identifying about 10 boats today, tag them, and then start the process to get those removed.
He's riding along with officers Ryan Barrett and Chad Diekman on one of their routine patrols. They approach a white 30-foot yacht. It's anchored without registration.
Hello, Sheriff's Office. No movement or sounds or anything.
Wouldn't call it a derelict boat, but it's at anchor without registration. So we'll go ahead and put a tag on this and see if they'll follow up with us.
Hudspeth places a citation sticker on the boat. Think of it sort of like getting a ticket for an expired license plate. If a boat collects too many stickers and the owner's unreachable, it could be seized by the state.
All right, we're good.
Much of their day involves interacting with people who live on their boats full time. We're often called liveaboards.
Your first name, sir?
Ryan.
Ryan with the B, R-Y-A-N?
Aye.
See, I'm always wrong at something.
Oregon law allows any registered vessel to anchor or moor in the same spot for up to 30 days. When boats stay longer, it could be a sign that they're inoperable or simply abandoned.
Hi, dude, good luck.
So far in 2025, the Department of State Lands and the Marine Board have removed 16 vessels. But when people are living on the boats, Officer Diekman says the issue becomes more complex.
It's a sensitive area where we're not going to necessarily go remove shelter from somebody who might otherwise be houseless, right, in that circumstance. So it's a little bit of a controversial subject, but you got to kind of just be sensitive to it, right, and do what we can, so.
Hi, I'm Zora. I'll teach work. I'll check in with people.
Further upriver, Zora Hess understands more than most how sensitive the issue can be. She's a community organizer who spends a lot of time kayaking the Willamette, checking in on liveaboards and bringing them food and supplies.
For me, it's always get to know people. And it can start with just when you pass by, if you're on a boat, give them a smile or wave. Simple as that. I will bring some food.
Okay, if I'm not here, I'm just
going to drop it off here.
Yeah.
Pete Sestilio bought his sailboat at an auction for well below market value. These bargain boats usually need significant repairs and are often non-operational. Pete also lacks registration, which means his boat could be flagged as a potential abandoned and derelict vessel.
We've been living out here for 2 years now, so we're homeless, you know, we're struggling.
Boat owners who want to stay in one place for more than 30 days can pay to park at a marina. But Pete says the fees are too expensive.
Most of these marinas want $350 a month. I mean, we can't afford a registration, let alone $350 a month, you know?
Abandoned boats present a complex challenge. Officials must balance removing environmental hazards with not displacing people who have nowhere else to go. With so many Oregonians struggling to make ends meet, it's a reminder that sometimes home is wherever you can safely drop anchor. I'm Noah Thomas, reporting.
This is KMUN. You're listening to KMUN News. If you have a news tip or story idea, get in touch. Email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at KMUN.org. Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and the KMUN News Team. That includes host and producer Skylar Butenshin, and me, news director Katie Frankowitz, and our intern Sylvia Thorpe. Our news broadcasts air Monday through Thursday, beginning at 7:59 in the morning and 4:59 in the evening. To provide general feedback about KMUN's programming, what you like, what you don't like, if you have questions, email us at feedback@kmun.org. That's feedback@kmun.org. You can also call us during regular business hours at 503-325-0010. The Ship Report with Joanne Rideout is coming up next. You're listening to KMUN.